I'm here.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Hello. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Just holed up in my house.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I really like this project a lot. I read the book like a couple days. Well, I read the book like leading up to watching the show. And I think the music is so subtle and really enhances a lot of the drama that goes on. So thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Of course. My pleasure.
So I sort of, when I was, you know, looking through your resume, you've done so many different things and you've done, you know, so many different genres of both television and movies. I have to, you know, give a little shout out to 2007's The Mist. I love the music in that movie. Yeah. Someone actually offered to watch that with me and I was like, I'm not watching that movie during a quarantine. So I wanted to initially ask you, do you purposely look for projects that are completely different than one another? Do you just have things come your way? How do you sort of like pick your projects and how did Little Fires Everywhere come to you?
Well, I think it's a combination of all of that. I obviously am looking, I'm doing homework, you know, looking at what's being made up front and telling my agent that I would love to do that, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's sometimes I campaign very hard for certain projects. Other times they just walk in the door. And I think I've been fortunate that I've been approached by a lot of tremendously just artistic filmmakers over the years. Mm-hmm. Great writers and directors and producers that just have always been, you know, doing something. I mean, you mentioned The Mist. I mean, Frank Darabont, it doesn't get much better than Frank.
Yeah.
So to have an opportunity to do several things with him. And this project was interesting. I have a long-term relationship with ABC Productions. Dawn mm-hmm. Solaire, who runs the music department there, and I are old friends, and she brings me in on things that she really feels that would be good and that I could really help on. This was a project that I was not aware of, and that she came to me and said, look, we have this book, which is Reese Witherspoon's company is making, mm-hmm. and it's mostly women. They'd like to keep it all women. And in fact, Mary Ramos, the music supervisor, has brought in Isabella Summers from Florence and the Machine to do the music. But she's never done this before, and everyone agrees that she needs help. She needs a partner. She needs someone to guide her through this and to be her collaborator in this. And Dawn said, I can't think of anybody better than you. So what do you think? And I said, well, this is the sort of thing, you know, when it walks in the door, I'd not read the book, but I'd certainly heard about it. It was, you know, one of those books that everyone is chatting about. And of course, Isabella is a bit of a she is a pop star, and she's a bit of a notorious character out there in the world of songwriters and producers. So this was one of those opportunities that I just couldn't resist, you know. So I went in and I met with Isa, and we got along great. And then I met with all the ladies on the show, and we got along fine. We got along great too. So I dove in. So.
So working you work a lot like by yourself, working with a partner who, like you say, hasn't done this before. Like, where do you start? Do you just look at themes of things or like motifs of characters? Like when you collaborate with somebody like that, where did you really begin?
Well, it became apparent to me right from the beginning, even before we started any work at all, that I've co-composed in the past with different people, and as much as you try to collaborate, at the end of the day you sort of end up splitting the work, and I, if you both have the same level of experience, then that can be fine. You trade files back and forth, and you can overdub stuff on each other's parts, and you start to get a something that's slightly different than either one of you would have done. But it occurred to me that really it was someone like Isa, that we really do want to collaborate. We really do want to just create something that she would never do and something that I would never do. The real sum of what we are in the room together. So we just set it up, you know, just the logistics from it to support the fact that we would just sit in the room together. And so it was a slower start because we had to get to figure out how this would work and how each other works and what, you know, just even the technology of music is so almost overwhelming these days, what you can do and what you have to have in order to be able to do certain things. Anyway, but we just got rolling eventually and discovered how we work, and it eventually just started flowing out. We just started,
like, got into a rhythm together. So I wanted to ask about the theme music. I think the theme itself is so striking, both visually and musically. I feel like it has sort of a, it starts, I want to say, like, kind of whimsically, despite, like, how sinister it kind of gets. Can you sort of walk me through, with the creation of the theme music, what you wanted to start the audience off with?
Well, I think you actually hit upon two adjectives that are very apropos here. There is something about this show which is slightly whimsical. I mean, it's almost surreal, some of this stuff. And then it's also, at the same time, it's very, very dark, and it's very, very moving, and stirs emotions in people that I think, we'll put it this way, I was quite surprised that I got as worked up emotionally on certain aspects of the show. And I think a lot of people will find themselves engaged in this in ways they would not normally expect. So, having realized, I think we'd seen the first four or five episodes when we finally just had to get that main title locked in. Because we're doing eight episodes, they're all sort of coming out, and we're, of course, the last thing on the chain. So we do have scripts for all eight. We have picture for four or five, I think. And then when we're actually diving in and having to start to get specific. And so there was a certain sense of, well, there has to be, like you say, a certain sort of whimsy. I can't even know if I think of any other adjectives that's any better than that. There is a lightness and a sort of a, I hesitate to use the word fairy tale aspect, but almost in a way, because there's a certain way that world of Shaker Heights almost is slightly out of reality, you know, the way it's presented.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I almost thought, like, it's not obviously, it sort of reminded me when I first heard the first couple notes of it. And since I know it takes place in, like, a suburban, like, sort of whimsical almost kind of town, like, my mind sort of went immediately to something like Desperate Housewives or, I felt that whimsy or that lightness throughout the theme, even though, you know, there are shades of stuff that is darker and darker.
Yeah. Well, good, because that was our intention. Our intention is to keep you sort of suspended between all these various worlds at the show. And so that when that theme comes back, it can, you know, connect you emotionally to those various types of emotions.
And there's an element in the theme that I started picking up as I was watching some of the other episodes, like when we get to the violin that's on fire. And I feel like maybe it's just my imagination. I feel like I was picking up on a lot of violin cues throughout the season. I've seen about seven episodes now. And we know that, you know, Izzy's a real driving force in the story, and she plays the violin. Was that sort of something to keep her involved throughout the whole story, or is that just a coincidence?
No, not a coincidence at all. Very, very intellectually probed and discussed and manipulated, and that violin theme is very precisely timed to come in over the burning violin, and then, of course, as you say, Izzy plays the violin, and there's the one montage, I think, in episode, I don't know how many, if you want spoiler alerts here, but in episode four, I think it is, there's a montage of that's accompanied by Izzy practicing the violin, and she's playing an Alanis Morissette song.
Oh my God! When I heard that, I freaked out.
Playing this thing, you know. So we tried it in a number of ways to keep Izzy and her artistic power. I mean, because that's really the fascinating part of the story is here. You have these two daughters who really desire the lives of the other mother, and yet at the same time, Pearl is also an artist, so she's the one that really gets torn. But Izzy really wants that artistic life, and becomes a catalyst, of course, as the whole drama unfolds.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask about a couple other specific uses of music?
Not at all.
It's funny enough, the ones that I picked out that I wanted to talk about, one is with Mia and one is with Elena. So I guess I'll ask about the Mia one first. I think it's episode 3 when she's just contemplating things and she's putting together, she's working on her art. And there's some music there, or the music where she's like packing up the painting towards, I think, episode four. As well. Yeah. I guess in terms of both women, were there specific, I don't want to say like motifs that you wanted to use for each woman? That piece of music that I mentioned just sort of stuck out to me in terms of the differences between the women. Is there something that you intended to put in there to sort of identify with them?
Well, yes. Mia's music was probably the most complex in that she was the most complex character in that sense. a lot of what was helped the foundation of the music was actually the source music. And with Mary Ramos and with Dawn, they went through and defined a lot of what each character would listen to. For instance, Mia listens to Nina Simone and to Quincy Jones and a lot of classic music of the African-American culture of leading up to her, even vintage stuff. But her character is much angrier than that. So we had to sort of come in and supply that. When Izzy gets angry, you can put the heavy metal music in her earphones. But with Mia, she would use the earphones to relax and to calm down. So when she goes on a rampage and starts to steal things from the house, we had to supply that sort of music. So there's a theme there for Mia in that setting. Now, you mentioned the setting of when she's packing up the picture. That was a very complex scene because there's a lot going on in there, some of which we have no idea what it is. What is the relationship? What is this picture? Why is it so significant? Why is parting with it seem to be such a huge deal to her? This is only revealed over the episodes following that. So the music can only do so much, but it has to hint at things that are going to come and give you at least the emotional, define her emotions for you, as to why she's looking like she's, why this is such a big deal for her. And so we ended up, there is a theme over the whole episodes that we call the mother-daughter theme, because that, of course, is one of the main things of what this is all about. You have just these constant mother-daughter relationships. You have Pearl and Mia. You have Izzy and, you have Elena and her two daughters. You have the young Chinese girl and her two mothers. and all these switching roles, the various types of mothering that everyone tries to do. So that scene seemed to really be based around, you have Elena mothering Pearl. You have Izzy wondering about Mia. And then you have this interesting relationship of Mia and this picture. And, of course, that turns out to be almost a mother-mentor relationship with someone that we have yet to figure out who that is. So that's that theme. And if you, from a musicological point of view, if you go back and analyze the 8 episodes, you'll see how that theme evolves. I think it's first stated with Pearl and Mia as in episode 1 when they're happy together and they're falling asleep in the same mattress on the floor when they first move in. And it evolves over the series. It's plays when Mia discovers that Pearl is lying to her about the math class. It plays a number of scenes when there's mothers betraying daughters. And So it became a very useful theme to use for those sorts of scenes.
Just keeps getting more, you know, tangled and much more complicated.
Yeah,
because I kept thinking of all the relationships I was like listening to the music as I was watching it, and I was like, okay, so Elena's mothering Pearl, and I actually thought that with the picture, it was because, you know, people always say you give birth to your art. So I thought that there was sort of a motherly relationship there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess I said there was a moment with each one of the women. I realized that as you were explaining that the other moment I wanted to talk to you about is at the end when, not the end of the series, but the end of the fourth episode, I believe, when Mia takes her, you know, that really cool mural of Elena's face and sort of sets it on fire. And I love the music in that moment. Is that sort of like a musically point of no return?
Absolutely. That sort of is the turning point of the show. That's a big moment. That's a theme that I think I'm not sure if it's 100% unique to that moment, but it really is. It sort of stands alone on that moment. I think we managed to make small quotes to it here and there, but nothing that ever really stands up like it does in that one scene. There was just, you know, it really shows starts to see the dark underpinnings of what's brewing emotionally in these women's lives, and sort of deserve that.
Yeah, it sort of like takes it from that. Because, I mean, I feel like some people may say that, you know, it's a suburban story, but I feel like that's the moment of the series where it gets really dark and it's like, no, like, lives are going to change and things are going to be different from here on out. I love that section of music. I listened to it a couple of times. So I guess a question to close with, I know you're working on a lot of things. What would you say is something that we can look forward to from you after Little Fires Everywhere closes?
Well, I'm actually getting back into film.
You're doing Bill and Ted, aren't you?
I am doing Bill and Ted from one extreme to the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's almost done. And, to be honest with you, it's a welcome relief. I mean, Little Fires was difficult and very emotional and very, and this of course is Bill and Ted is just pure absurdism. And, it's a breath of fresh air to getting Bill and Ted back and forth into the future.
Yeah. Like literally complete opposite of what this show is. Yeah.
Exactly. And then after that, I'm moving on to a very interesting Lee Daniels' new film, which is,
oh wow. That's great.
Yeah. It's The United States versus Billie Holiday. And this back into just an emotional, you know, roller coaster. And
that'd be amazing.
Really one of Lee's, you know, he's at his top of his game right now. So it's quite a film. And Andra Day plays Billie Holiday, and she's just magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard about her casting with that, and I was like, oh gosh, that's gonna be really great. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I think the score for Little Fires Everywhere is very subtle and beautiful. So thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome.
All right. Have a good day.